Hello, welcome to Brap Life. My name's Angel. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's so cool to hear so much from you guys lately. Keep sending the messages, keep letting me know what you think about the episodes. It's really awesome to hear from you. In today's episode, we're sitting down with Alex Martin. He's a retired Supercross pro and he also owns Troll Training. It was a really awesome opportunity to sit down and just kind of be a little bit nerdy about training and to hear what Alex has been up to since he left Supercross. He's been doing a lot of running and just a lot of really cool things, and it was super awesome to touch base with him. And then also to know that he lives so close to where I used to live in Minnesota. So it was kind of fun to touch base about that and connect and just learn a little bit more about Alex. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode and I'll see you next week.
So thank you for taking time out of your schedule, first of all, because you're incredibly busy. You're always doing like 100 things, I feel like. And you're training for the Boston Marathon right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's kind of been like a 2-year, 3-year process, but getting pretty close. Probably, let's see, the day is the 10th. So about 10, 11 more days. So we're getting crunch time right now. I'm honestly basically in taper mode right now, which is kind of nice because I've been doing a lot of miles each week and now I can kind of just tone it down a little bit and coast into Boston. So I'm excited though.
That's really cool. It was so funny because I've been following your career for quite a few years and, like I started getting back into running right around the same time that you started posting about it. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I thought it was so awesome. But I went the non-road running. I went trail running and I was doing the ultra marathon stuff. So I was supposed to do my first ultra marathon last year and I was out in Tennessee at the time. And then the hurricane happened. So it wiped out all the trails. So I didn't get to do it. But and then since then, like my life has been in turmoil. I've been all over the country. I went from Tennessee to Arizona, which is where I am now, to Texas and all over. So now I'm getting more settled. But I haven't figured out if I'm going to do an ultra marathon or if I'm just going to focus on dirt bike racing this year. So I'm getting into, I'm getting into hard enduro this year. So, that's pretty hard on the body. So I'm going to see how the first couple go and then decide from there.
Yeah. I feel like I was watching your podcast with Cody Webb actually. And it sounds like you're just new getting into the sport, you know, which is cool. So how long have you been riding for?
So I've been riding for about 5 years, but I've really been like getting seat time in the last year and a half. So really got like 4 hours a year before that because I was in school full time. I worked full time. But I was on a little TTR and, you know, just trying to get around at the trails in Minnesota. So,
yeah. Okay. So you've been to Minnesota before? Are you from Minnesota?
I lived in Minnesota for about 15 years. I was in Rochester and then in Kenyon. So,
oh wow. So yeah, you're real close to home here.
Yep. I was at the Tileman, trail ride for several years in a row. So
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, for me, I ran quite a bit. I always feel like my best years in my motocross career were like when I could run. And the reality of motocross and supercross is just, or dirt bikes in general, honestly, is it's really hard to be consistent with running because ankle injuries, knee injuries, crashing in general. So that's why I feel like the go-to is a bicycle for a lot of athletes, just because it's low impact, it's easy on the joints. And I mean, I can remember doing like, you know, 50, 60 laps a day in Supercross. And like the last thing you want to do is like put your running shoes on, you know, like, I mean, especially like later in my career, like landing off Supercross triples like that, like my knees would just like, I actually bought an inversion table and I would just go home and like lay on that thing or like hang upside down for 5 to 10 minutes when I'd get back from Supercross, just because it like, it felt good.
Oh my God, that's crazy. So I want to explore this more. But let's start at the beginning. How did you get started in riding?
So yeah, it's kind of no secret, I guess. My parents own Millville, so I was born in 89 in Minnesota and basically grew up with like yeah, Spring Creek Motocross Park, Millville in my backyard. Yeah, just my brother and I, like, we used to just go over there and ride our dirt bikes after school and had the Pro National. I mean, so yeah, I think the Pro Nationals have been going since 83 at Millville. So I mean it's been around since I was alive and kind of always grew up around it. I kind of like to say, like, there's like, what else was I gonna do? You know what I mean? Like, I do feel like my mom really tried to get both of my brother and I, like, into, like, I did cross country and I played soccer and I even took piano lessons, even though I absolutely hated it. And I really tried to get into a lot of other sports. But for me, it was always just motocross. And honestly, like, it probably hurt us a little bit, for sure me, just because my dad, like, refused to take us anywhere else, because he actually was he was like an off-road racer, actually factory Can-Am back in the 80s, ATK, and like did the off-road scene, actually. More like hair scrambles and enduro. But he's actually like the 1985 hair scramble national champion, which is kind of funny. But so yeah, like, he knew the risks and everything to be at, like, that level. And so he didn't really want us to be hurt and taking those risks, right? But like I said, being exposed to it, I feel like that's the only thing we really wanted to do. And so but yeah, having said that, I didn't go to Loretta's for my first time until I was 15, when I was in the super mini class. So that's why I kind of feel like I was a little bit of a late bloomer, because especially nowadays, like, you have these kids that are going to facilities and, 4 or 5 years old. Like, we've had people through troll training reach out, like, "Hey, my kid's 4 years old. Like, you want to get him on a training program?" And
Oh
I'm
my
just like,
God.
they're just like, put him in hockey, like, let him have fun for a little while. But yeah, so I do feel like a little bit of a late bloomer, but I think that's also why I lasted till I was 32 as well, So.
A late bloomer. That's really funny. You say that to somebody who's just starting hard enduro at 35. So I completely get that. But yeah, it's definitely a sport for younger people, I feel like, on the motocross supercross side. Because I started following motocross and supercross before I started riding even. So it was kind of cool to like be able to talk to you. You probably don't remember, but I actually met you a few years back at Supercross, I believe it was.
Which one?
In Minnesota.
Oh,
I used to go every year. When they were in Minnesota, I would go every year.
Okay,
So
cool.
yeah, it was really cool because like hometown guys. So that's what it felt like at least. I mean, Minneapolis is close enough.
Yeah, no, something special about Minnesota when you grew up there, But yeah, actually, I think the last time I raced there was 22, and I don't know if you were there at US Bank Stadium, but, like, I'm pretty sure I got carbon monoxide poisoning when I raced there that year.
That place is crazy. I thought it was such a weird place to have Supercross, but I guess there's not really a whole lot of options. But
Well, I mean, the stadium itself is, like, amazing, but I think they had some issues with, like, the ventilation or something. Because, I mean, I was like, yeah, I didn't think about it, but, like, we were in the stadium all day long, and then usually for, like, the colder climates, you're, like, in the stadium from basically sun up to sundown. And like, yeah, I just, like, I didn't sleep at all that night, and I had bloodshot eyes and headache, and, like, I was pretty messed up for a couple days. So
Wow, that's crazy. Oh my God. No, I didn't know that. Okay, sorry, I lost my train of thought
Yeah,
because I was
sorry.
like just thinking
Sidetrack.
about that. Like, that's crazy. So when you started like to get serious about racing, like how old would you say that you were when you started to feel like you really had like a passion and like you really wanted to like push hard?
Probably, like, around 14, 13, 14 years, 15 years old, like, probably about a year before I went to Loretta's. Is when I more or less decided that, yeah, I kind of wanted to take a swing at it. Funny enough, actually, it's kind of a funny story, but so it was, like, the year that the Alessis were, they it was kind of like kind of like famous in the moto circle back then. Like they came up to Minnesota for the summer, and like Mike and Jeff were training at Millville, and Mike was going to do the Believe the Hype, make his debut at Millville. So this would have been like 2008, maybe, or no, maybe it's even before that, 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. But I think Ricky Carmichael was still racing, but like, so we were riding quite a bit with the Alessis that summer. And like, I mean, yeah, the deal was like they had to weed whack like an hour and then they could ride for an hour, which didn't really last very long. But actually, like Mike had told my dad, like, hey, like Alex is like a, you know, he's really got like some potential. Like Mike Alessi actually told my dad that, like, you know, like you should pursue this whole motocross thing. So that always like was kind of cool to hear that. And so that would probably been around the age of 13, 14. But yeah, like I said, I just, you know, I was in school and I just had no interest really, like actually passionate interest other than dirt bikes at that age. And it was always the cool thing to do, and I enjoyed it. And then I had Millville in the backyard that I could go rip around, which actually, like, Millville sucks during the week, you know, just it's not as good as people think. Like, I mean, you have to put a lot of water and like prep into Millville to make it fun. Having said that, it's great training, you know, but it's like marbles during the week. But yeah, like I would say that 85 super mini age is when I really kind of flipped the switch. And then, but also at the same time, like my dad was like, hey, I'm not gonna wake you up in the morning. Like, if you're gonna do this, is on you. Like, you have to do the work. I'm not gonna hold your hand. And so honestly, like from my experience now, like and seeing, like I've spent a lot of time with like Chase Sexton and those guys, and like their dads were very involved. And I do think that that kind of hurt me, right? Because as a 14, 15-year-old kid, one, you don't know what you need to be doing or like how much it takes, you know? So it took me a while like to figure out like how much training I needed to be doing or whatever, but I think long term it helped just because like I really like wanted to succeed on my own, you know, and not have like my parents like waking me up in the morning.
Yeah, definitely. That was the thing I was going to ask actually, is like what changed? Like, so you had a training program now, or like what exactly changed when you made that decision other than having to wake yourself up?
Yeah, so honestly, just I mean, I was probably not until my first year as a pro when I actually had like a legit training program. I trained with Rhino in West Coast, California, 2009, and learned a lot from him. And then just honestly from being around people, you know, and like did the Florida Winter Ams, yeah, a couple winters, spent time in California, spent time in Texas. And that's one thing I think is maybe a little bit missed in these in the days of like training facilities. There's so many training facilities, but I always thought it was good to like go to California, ride the West Coast dirt, go to Texas, go to Florida, like ride different tracks and different, you know, facilities, get used to the different dirt. And so that's kind of what I did. And then we just kind of bounced around and like, yeah, learned from other people and different tracks. And yeah, it wasn't really until like later in my career when I actually had like a dedicated trainer and like stayed at a facility.
And what changed about your mindset at that point? Like, did you like start pushing harder? Like, what did that look like?
Well, at what point would you say?
Like when you really got serious about racing.
Yeah, I think just a switch flip of like, all right, like, you know, we're gonna make a go of it, you know. But I think there's a lot of stages, like from like early on. Like, I guess I got fifth at Loretta's in the super mini class, and so that was kind of like, I think I remember getting like a sponsor with Thor Gear and Alpine Star. Like, yeah, I got some sponsors and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, you know. And then the next year I got third in the B class, and then I think I went A, and then I went pro more or less. But I mean, it was honestly, for me, it was a long road. For those of you that have been like following my career, I mean, it was like 6 years, 6, 7 years into my pro career before like I actually got a factory ride and like started making like a decent salary, you know. So it wasn't like, I guess I ever had like a aha moment or it clicked. It was just like a gradual, like learning every year, building my fitness, building my skill set on the dirt bike, you know. I mean, even the last like couple years of my career, like learning bike setup and testing, you know. I feel like, yeah, you're always learning.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's a lot to learn with dirt bikes in any discipline. There's just so much to learn. I got my bike, or this bike that I'm on currently, last January, and there's so much that I had to learn about maintenance and stuff. Because with the TTR, I hardly had to do anything. And then I go from that to a Husqvarna TE300. It's a huge difference. And all of a sudden there's all this maintenance that has to be done and things that, like, if you don't do this, your bike's not going to run properly. So it's a lot to learn just from that standpoint. Then you throw technique into it, things like that. Trying to progress on the bike and trying to have a training protocol, trying to have a nutrition protocol, all of those things all work together. So it becomes a lot, especially like when you're new, but then also when you're trying to reach a new level, I feel like you have to put a lot more work into those things.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, it really comes down to time management. You know, I guess say you got to get a good night of sleep. You got to wake up early, get some cardio in the morning, you know, load up the bike, go to the track and then riding, like, as a privateer, like, you know, you do your riding, you know, whether it's 2 35-minute motors or whatever is on the agenda for the day. And then, you know, oil and filter, wash the bike, like, you know, check the chain, check the spokes, like check all the bolts, make sure your triple clamp bolts are tight, whatever, you know, don't want those falling out. You know, so there's a lot that goes there with that. And then, so you get done with the bike maintenance for the day. And then, you know, as a pro, like, you have to be training in the afternoon, typically, you know, it's kind of like you have to be training 2-3 times a day, you know, with the way the level is now. But I mean, it's exhausting for sure, you know? But I think it's good to be doing it when you're a teenager and in your 20s though, because you just don't know any better. And, you know, you still have that grit and passion to get it done. But I did notice, like, and when you get into your 30s, it gets a little bit different, you know, but.
And how do you feel like that's translated, like that kind of, I guess, discipline has translated into your running and to what you do now?
Yeah. So actually, I kind of had a little bit of a passion project this winter. I got into YouTube and filming and editing, and I just actually put together an 80-mile week video training for Boston. But I was kind of actually thinking a lot about the topic of, like, fatigue, you know, and how, like, so how fatigue for, like, running 80 miles a week, how that translates to, like, riding dirt bikes and stuff, because so I think, like, my thought process maybe, and you could feel free to give me some comments on this, but I feel like as a pro for 15 years, your thought process on training, it's like you just do it. I don't really, not that I don't struggle with motivation, because there's times when, like, I'm really tired. I wake up, like, let's say after a 20-mile long run, like, I'm tired and I don't want to train. And yes, I'll take the day off. But for the most part, like, if I want to hit, you know, let's say I want to do a 242 marathon in Boston, I know that I need to be doing 70 to 80 miles a week, and I need to be doing, you know, speed sessions and a long run or whatever. And I really want to hit that goal. So I just do the work for the most part. So, and I don't know if that's something I've learned just from being a professional for 15 years, but I guess the way I view, like, my running is just like, I just want to do it because I want to meet my goal.
I think that's definitely a product of your life, because that's not something that, like, it feels like it comes more naturally for you. Like, you have the discipline because you have that background that, like you said, it's just autopilot almost. Like, I have to do the thing. Versus, it's kind of funny that you said about motivation, because I always say motivation is very fleeting. So, like, you can be super motivated, and the morning I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go for this run, or I'm going to hit the gym, or I'm going to eat really well. And then the morning comes and all of a sudden the motivation is not there anymore. And that's where discipline kicks in. I always say that I'm not motivated to do something. I say I'm inspired to do something, because inspiration lasts a lot longer, in my personal opinion.
Well, and so on that topic too, like, I do quite a few, like, nutrition consults, and, you know, we talk about, like, how to eat for an athlete. And, like, I always say, like if you wake up in the morning and, like, you have, like, a salad, or, like, let's say you go, like, you eat a keto meal, like, the chances of you getting out the door and training are pretty low, you know, whereas, like, you kind of need to eat to fuel the training, you know? And so, like, honestly, like, I opt for more, like, high carb, kind of high sugar stuff, because, like, that gets me out the door, you know? Like, you've probably been there before. You have a lot of protein and a lot of fat and a lot of fiber. Like, you don't want to train, you know? Yeah. So, like, it's really important to understand, like, the timing of those foods. And, like, I'm all about eating vegetables for sure, but, like, you don't want to eat, like, a big salad and then go for a run, you know, or, like, load up your bike and go ride your dirt bike for, 3 hours, you know. So
Yeah.
I think really like timing your food really is helps the motivation too.
Yeah.
Like for me, for example, like my go-to, wake up, black coffee and like a Pop Tart, and boom, I'm out the door. So, you know, there's something to
Pop
it maybe.
tart. Oh my God. We have like the least healthy foods are talked about on this podcast. It's so funny with like how many pros we've had on here who are like, yeah, I just go to McDonald's. And I'm like, what? Like,
Yeah.
but I mean,
Yeah.
it's realistic though. And I think that's really cool because, you know, people have this idea that pros only eat a certain way or only do this or only do that. And I think that that's one thing that people really like about this platform is that we get to see kind of behind the scenes. People eat Pop-Tarts, people eat McDonald's, you know. And I think that that's really cool that people are willing to be open about that, that it's not 100% all the time. I'm going to eat meat all the time, or I'm just going to eat this, or it's cool to see that there's variety. You can still make it work with that. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, and like I definitely I'm a big advocate of like eating healthy, you know, but I like I said, there's a time and a place, and like
Yeah.
ultimately, you know, you need to like look at your performance goals. Like what do you want to achieve, whether it's a fast 5K, half marathon, go fast off-road, qualify for Loretta's or whatever. And you kind of have to just, you know, you have to eat appropriately. And I do think it's kind of cool, like if you follow like cycling or triathlon, like there's a lot of like research that's being done, it seems like in the last few years, just like on what they're eating, and high carbs are king, honestly. Like how many carbs people are having. Like before it was, you know, the recommended was 30 to 60 grams of hour for carbs. And now it's like 100 and 100 plus, 150. In some cases, athletes are having like 180 grams of carbs an hour. And it's like if you, I mean, I know I've worked with a fair amount of GNCC racers who are doing, you know, 3 hours. I'm not sure how many hours you guys race over there on the West Coast. Because you do, like, is it Hare and Hound or what is it over there?
I haven't done any of the Hare and Hounds, but yeah, the Hare and Hounds are about 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like if you think about 100, let's just say you did 100 grams an hour, you know, you're talking 300 to 400 grams of carbs that you should be having, you know, and that's not even including sodium, you know. But I mean, that's just a huge performance advantage. Like if you can get those calories in, because you got to think like in a marathon, the top runners are fueling every 15 minutes, like literally every 15 minutes. Like I was actually just talking to my buddy, old Filthy Phil, today, and he was saying like he was at club, and like the kids just, I mean, really, it's like almost everybody I've worked with, like they under eat. They're never eating enough. Like kids just have like water. There's no electrolytes in their water. They just have half a banana or like maybe a Clif bar. And then they go out there for 35 minutes. And it's just like that's just not enough, you know? And it takes time for people to realize they need to eat more.
Yeah, definitely. I when I was younger, I did a lot of fasted cardio because like that was the thing. And you know, that was just like for me it was like a weight loss thing, so like that was how to lose the most weight. But I found that my running was never really that great. I could run fast, but I could only run fast for a mile. I could never go like 2 miles at my 6 minute pace. And like I always slowed down really quickly and I was like I didn't really understand it. And then as I got older and got back into running, that was when I realized that fueling is super important, that protein is needed in my diet as much as carbs, that balance was what was most important. That again, that's for me personally because every person is different. You know, I have a friend who basically runs on carbs and that's all he ever eats. And like he hardly eats protein, he eats some veggies, but it's like a lot of pasta, but he's a really, really great rider. And, but he just feels bogged down if he has a lot of protein. Whereas I'm the opposite. If I eat a ton of carbs, I feel like I can't go as long. But again, it comes down to timing because then if I go out and I do a 4 hour ride with the guys out in some gnarly stuff, I'm going to come back and I'm going to feel just completely depleted if I hadn't eaten a lot of carbs before that. So, and you know, then refuel again after. So,
Yeah, no,
anyway.
it's definitely, I think it's good just to, you know, listen to your body, you know, because, you know, if you really are paying attention, you can typically kind of understand like, oh, you need more protein or fat or carbs, you know. But yeah, calories are king.
Yes. And that's been a huge, huge adjustment for me. Like I said, coming from like the whole fasted cardio thing, I did that a lot in my late teens and early 20s. So it was a long time. And so to kind of like retrain my brain, but I've really had to retrain my whole thought process in a lot of things. So it's kind of all worked together. Mindset in general, being disciplined for somebody who comes from no sports, like I didn't grow up doing sports or anything like that. So I really had to figure out discipline on my own in the last couple years. Like, like you were saying, you have that goal. There's nobody to come and wake me up either in my 30s, you know? So yeah. I have to do it on my own, but I had to find that inspiration and why did I want to do this to keep myself going? That was really important, was figuring out my why.
Yeah. No, and honestly, you bring up a good point with the fasted cardio. So, I mean, I feel like I've tried a lot of different things in my career, you know, nutrition wise and training wise, and like, it's all trial and error, right? Cause you're everybody's different. You got to figure out what works for you. And that's why I do feel like there's some programs that were pretty cookie cutter, and it just, you know, that's why I think you need to pay attention to your body. But, the fasted cardio, like from what I've learned, and I used to do, like, I kind of geeked out and I'd do 2 to 3 times a year. I'd get blood testing done and I analyze like my cortisol levels, which is your stress hormone. And I pay attention to testosterone and like where my thyroid is at. And like, there's trends you can see, like with the schedule that we would do, you know, racing supercross in January to May, and then outdoors from May to August. It's really taxing, especially on your hormones. And like, so like, if you're doing a lot of fasted cardio and then you're training high intensity zone 5, like it's really hard as in your cortisol levels, like supercross racers in general have really high cortisol just because there's a lot of adrenaline, you're taking risks, breaking bones, all that sort of thing, you know? And so, then you throw fasted cardio into it and it's kind of like a metabolic nightmare really, because you're already stressed, then you're more stressed because your body's starving. It's definitely something to think about. Like, you know, it could be kind of harmful long-term. So it sounds like, I'm glad that you kind of figured it out.
Yeah. And it's been kind of crazy. Like I'm a nerd and I love to like learn new things. So apparently learning dirt bike technique and all of this other stuff wasn't enough. So I threw myself into like fitness and nutrition in the last couple years and kind of tried to experiment and figure out what worked best for me. And it's actually really funny that you brought up the hormone thing, because that was something that I figured out too, was as a female, obviously our hormones are a little bit different, but that my hormones really affected one, how I ate, but how I metabolized things and how I performed. So it was a really big eye opener. And that was just probably in the last 6 or 7 months that I've been able to kind of put that together with everything else. So it was kind of funny that you brought that up.
Yeah. Cool.
So how did Troll Training get started? Like, was that something that you just kind of like naturally fell into with everything else that you were doing?
It's kind of funny. So, I mean, the nickname Troll Train got started by probably my buddy, Phil Nicoletti, and honestly, Steve Mathis from Pulp. And I kind of like didn't like it. I felt like they were like belittling me, picking on me, you know, like literally there's this, I could send it to you maybe, but there was like this photo of me, like with this red funnel on my head and at Club MX, and they're like, oh, troll, you know, whatever. And obviously, so I'm only 5'4". I'm kind of a little guy as it is. But I feel like the nickname kind of started to get some traction like around 2015, 2016. And like Mathis and like Jason Wygant were like kind of saying like on NBC live broadcast, like Troll Train, you know? And then it was probably about 2019. Honestly, not till 2019. One of my buddies, Briar Perry, who owns 180 Decals, he showed up to A1 and he's like, hey, do you mind if I just like film you for like a race vlog? And I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, I got better things to do. Like, I was never really a big social media guy. I mean, even to this day, like it's tough for me to put things out on social media, which may sound funny since I have a YouTube channel, but, so Briar did this edit for A1 and it was like, when I was on JGR, and I'm like, dude, this is actually kind of cool, you know? So we put it on YouTube channel, and like, that was kind of, the rest was history. Ended up doing like a race vlog all of 2020, 21, and taught the rest of my career, really. But like one thing I didn't realize is, yeah, like the brand that was building. I feel like YouTube really built a brand around Troll Train. And then so my longtime coach John Wessling was like probably two years before I retired. He's like, hey, we should really do, because like we both were really passionate about health and fitness, and like we'd go down all these rabbit holes for training and exercise science and like VO2 max, fast twitch, whatever. And so we basically just teamed up, me and John, with Troll Training. And there was actually a guy, Miles Brazil from Reno, Nevada, that was involved early on too. And yeah, so basically we started Troll Training, and that's kind of what started it, I guess. And I actually still race for another year. And it's funny, like, I mean, it's grown a lot. But like, I remember like at A1, like I would have my laptop with me, and I'd be like hanging out between a heat race and the main, and like somebody would sign up for our bronze program, and I'd be like sending them a welcome email before the main event, you know? So like, yeah, I just like carry, I got in the habit of like carrying my laptop around everywhere and like sending welcome emails, like if I was in the airport lounge or whatever. So.
That's crazy. That's serious dedication. But it's really cool when you find something like that that you're passionate about. Like I think it's really awesome because a lot of times people are afraid, what am I going to do when I'm done racing?
Yeah, no, just being passionate about yeah, what I was doing with training and whatnot. So
That's awesome. And what's your like overall like vision for troll training? Like what's your ultimate end goal?
yeah, I mean, I think at this point it's grown a lot, and I really enjoy like working with the customers, the clients that we have, and like helping them accomplish their goals. And obviously you always want to grow and get bigger, you know. But I for us, like for me especially, it's the quality. Like I want the quality to be there, and the people that I work with, like I want to make a difference. And you know, so like we really like we brought in some assistant coaches just to make sure, you know, like we're commenting and like communicating with athletes, and we definitely try our best, you know. But there's just a lot of organization. Like I've learned a lot of like life skills, I feel like, with Troll Training, just you know, between running a website and running a business essentially, and you know, just keeping track of, there's a lot of nuances with the training, and especially with how big we've become. But yeah, I mean, ultimately I think it all started just from like wanting to train safely and intelligently. I feel like there was programs that I was around, like even as a pro, where I was just like this can't be like, you know, like what
The
are we
best
doing
way to
here?
do
This
things.
can't be the best way. Yeah, like yeah, after I left Baker's Tractors, it's like this can't be the way, you know. And then I actually took a strength and conditioning course when I was on JGR, through like ISSA, and like honestly everything I learned there kind of was like flew in the face of what Baker's Factory was doing. But yeah, that's kind of a topic for another day. But yeah, so just like I just want the sport to be educated. It's like it's a dangerous sport as it is, and I think that we at least need to be training intelligently just to complement, you know, obviously the dirt bike's the most important thing, but we need to be training appropriately off the dirt bike to complement the on the dirt bike.
I really love that. That's great. I changed a lot of what I was doing when I started really focusing on my riding last year. And really, I mean, before that it was just running because I was trying to lose weight. But I also really love running, so it was just like, focus on the run. But then I started adding more mobility and strength into it. As I started deciding I wanted to try and race hard enduro because I got the big bike and I'm also a small person, so I'm only 5 feet tall. And I'm on a full size bike. And until December of this year, I didn't lower it. So it was super tall and absolutely ridiculous for me to be on. So there was a lot of like stretching to reach and try and just to be able to get on and off the bike. So that's kind of what led to the mobility and everything. But then I also did ISSA. So I learned a lot from that as well. So it's kind of
Yeah,
fun.
nice. Yeah, that's cool.
So.
Yeah.
So you guys have tiers to your program, correct? So do you want to explain a little bit of what those tiers are like?
Yeah, so we've kind of, and I don't know if these are the best names, but it seems like we stuck with them in like, you know, bronze, silver, gold in 2021, and it's kind of worked for us. But Bronze is essentially a fitness program off the bike. And I feel like it just complements motocross really well. You know, it's a combination of cardio, intervals, strength. I do think that combination it's confusing for a lot of people. You know, like should I do strength training or should I do cardio? Like how much intervals should I do? Like there's a lot of nuances. And I think that, I mean, you pick up a magazine or like read, go down a YouTube rabbit hole, and it's kind of like you hear all these different things, you know, like zone two, like is valuable, or oh, maybe you should only be doing high intensity intervals. And so I feel like our bronze program is just a really good combination of just throwing that all together. And I feel like it complements the dirt bike well. And then the silver and gold plan is like basically when I get involved. The bronze program is more like I'm checking in occasionally, but we have a coaches, assistant coaches, just strictly for the bronze people. And then, yeah, the silver and the gold is when I start getting involved, and like I'm reaching out to those athletes on a daily, weekly basis, and I'm programming like some of them are at facilities, like some of our guys are at Club or MTF. Some people are like, you know, Garrett Marshbanks out in California riding the PC test track, or Jason Anderson, those guys. So like you really have to be, well, Jason Anderson, he's a different level because he's in person with John almost every day. But yeah, I just feel like in order to give those guys the best program, like I have to understand, like, okay, what's the track look like, that what days are you riding the track, how's the weather, and then also too, like, hey, like do we need to be working on like long 30-minute motos, or do we need to be more working on like sections and sprint work, you know? So I'm really kind of, I feel like I've really evolved our questionnaire process to like understanding the strengths and weaknesses, so we can kind of cater to those, you know, and try not to make like a cookie cutter program. And then also to your point earlier, like talking about nutrition, that's a big part of it too. And I've actually built a lot of like PDFs, infographics, you know, just to help our athletes with that, because it's obviously, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, definitely. No, I really like everything that I've seen on trail training. I've just been traveling and spending way too much money on racing stuff, but
It
I'm hoping one
happens.
day I'll grow up and settle down a little bit and be able to do a program like that, because I think that you provide so much value. And I wanted to ask you, because I got asked this when I started talking about trail training to somebody else. So are you guys pretty motocross specific? You mentioned GNCC, but to me that's almost the same thing because you guys all go fast, but I understand one's in the woods and one's not, but
No, we're not, like, so it's kind of crazy, I guess, the people, you know, that we've, I was actually just looking the other day, and I think we're in like 15 countries and like 40 some states. And like there's been, like, I've had people reach out to me that like, hey, I'm training for the Iron Dog. I'm like, what the heck is the Iron Dog? I'm like, it's, I guess, a 2600 miles snowmobile race in Alaska, you know, or so, like stuff like that. But yeah, we definitely have a fair amount of GNCC guys. And then also, you know, kids getting ready for Loretta's, and we've trained some guys doing Baja 1000. I have a couple flat track guys that we work with, and snowcross, and then motocross and supercross. Obviously we're known for our motocross and supercross, but I do feel like the way our training, the training program that we offer, it really benefits like anything on two wheels. Honestly, it's not just motocross, supercross, you know. Obviously, if you're racing a dirt bike for 3 hours like you guys are, it's a little bit more endurance centric, you know. But like I think we were talking about earlier, like nutrition is arguably just as important too.
Yeah, definitely. I yeah, some of the hardened drill races can go up to 6 hours.
That's
And
such a
those
long
guys,
time.
it's such a long time. And I've been a spectator at these for the last year. Being out there as a spectator, somebody who's doing media, who's hiking through these courses, hiking through them is a lot. Throwing your bike through some of this stuff is absolutely insane. We always say that in order to ride a dirt bike, you have to be a little bit crazy. In order to do hard enduro, you have to be really crazy. So, but yeah, it definitely is a lot of endurance, but then there's a lot of strength to it too, because you do have to physically be able to muscle through some of that stuff. So it's definitely a lot of like cross training, essentially.
Yeah,
It's
I
like,
always almost thought like so it's interesting. So my longtime coach and now business partner John Wessling, he was really into cross country skiing in college. He did it at a very high level. And the way they cr train for cross country skiing, like cross country skiing actually is very underrated. I feel like, I mean, obviously it's world renowned, right? And it's an Olympic sport, but like in terms of motocrossers, the way they train can really be applied to motocross. It's a lot of cross training, upper body, lower body strength. And I do feel like with motocross, like not just running or not just cycling, I think adding in rowing and the ski erg and doing strength training, like all those things. And also the other kind of pro hack is like you can definitely add more volume to your program if you're combining the two. It's really hard to have a high volume like if you're only running or only cycling. But adding in, it's just a more well-rounded program.
Awesome. I like
So
that.
almost like a triathlete kind of is the way you have to train, seems like.
Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people in our discipline just say to just train on the bike because that's going to be the most beneficial, but it's you're getting all of that when you're on the bike. So, but I personally at my level, as somebody who's coming from, I always say I'm starting below ground zero because like I was a super uncoordinated person before I started riding. So I've had to first learn balance and all of that coordination to just be able to go in a straight line and then adding everything on top of it. So it's been a lot to learn and it's been a little overwhelming at times, but
Yeah.
I'm figuring it
Well,
out.
it's interesting because I really feel like it depends where you're at in your journey, you know, like where you're at. Like I would say ride the dirt bike as much as you can, like and learn the feel of the bike and the technique and like really hone that in. But I feel like at a certain, and I don't know for me like when the switch was, but definitely well into my pro career, you get to a point, because I mean I remember like as a coming home as a kid and like I had an hour meter, like when hour meters were a thing, like it was like that just appeared all of a sudden in the early 2000s. And like I want to put 3 or 4 hours on that thing every day, you know, which just seems super excessive. But that's like what my brother and I would do is we'd just try and put like 3 hours on our hour meter when we were on 85s and you know B class. But I think we just established so much sea time from a young age. And then like when I got into my late 20s and early 30s, like I just didn't have to ride. Like I would just ride once, or I should say I wouldn't ride, but like once or twice a week, 3 times a week, like was enough. You know, because you're always trying to balance like say let's say a factory 250 engine, usually you're putting 10 hours on it and then you're getting a new engine. Like when I was on TLD, like we'd have a whole new bike every 30 hours, you know, and so that's obviously pretty expensive, you know, and chains, sprockets, race fuel, like all that stuff's expensive. So you try to like make the time when you ride a dirt bike count, you know, like you don't want to just be putting around for hours and hours because it's an expensive motorcycle, right? And so that's where I think like the cross training just off the bike kind of took off, just because you're still trying to get that volume in each week, you know, without breaking the bank.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's really funny that you said that too, because we have had pros come on here who are like, yeah, zone two, and like, you know, just focus on sessioning things for our world. It's sessioning, you know, one or two features instead of doing motos, or some of them do motos, but they're at a really high level. I'm not doing motos. Like my speed doesn't make a difference right now. Like you said, for me at my level, it's getting that seat time. And that's the one big thing for me is that I get visually intimidated by things out on the trail because I haven't seen a lot of things before. So seat time is part of the training for me, and that's mental and physical for me. So it's a lot because the mental side of things, mindset is I have found to be really huge for this discipline. Hard enduro takes a lot of mindset, and if you don't have a strong mind, you're not going to go very far with it, no matter how strong you are, because you just can't keep pushing. So that's been my thing.
No, it sounds like you're, yeah, it's awesome. It's cool to see you're getting into the sport.
Trying to figure it out. Yeah. I I thought it was really cool to see motocross and supercross, but heights scare me. And so like, jumping was not my thing. So I thought it was really, really cool to watch it all. But it just wasn't, it wasn't for me. And I think everybody, you know, has to go and find their own discipline and everything. So what works out for them. But I think it's really cool that you've made this, this really awesome transition. It seemed very seamless into what you're doing now. And it seems like you're having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, it's cool to see you kind of going all over the place. You just did a marathon here in Arizona not too long ago. And you're like kind of all over the place with your marathons, I feel like. Do you enjoy the travel since you did it so much when you were younger?
Well, yeah, it's, I'm not traveling as much as you think. It's for me anyways. I did the Arizona Marathon in February and then Boston in April. So I was home for a little while. And so my wife and I, we just had a little baby girl in September. And so like, I really, honestly, I went to A1. That was the only Supercross race that I went to this year, which is kind of crazy for me. But I've kind of just been feeling like, yeah, with two kids at home now, like it's really hard to leave. It's hard to leave the family. And especially like more or less, we're in the newborn phase for most of the winter. And so like, I just didn't want to go anywhere. I don't want to leave the family. And, you know, we're in it. I'm fortunate. I'm in a spot where my wife can be a stay at home mom and, you know, we can just kind of like, I can focus on growing troll training and be around the kids as they grow up and just kind of be there as a dad, as a father. But like, having said that, I did sign up for, I think, six marathons this year, and I did the Berkey ski race, which is luckily like a lot of the stuff I'm doing is pretty close to home. Most of the marathons are either in Minnesota or Wisconsin, so the only travel ones were the Arizona and Boston. And then if I do qualify, so I don't know if I'll do Leadville yet, I have to qualify. But then obviously that one would be in Colorado in August. But to be honest, like I got the running bug pretty bad, but I'm like, if I make it to Leadville, like sweet, but if I don't, like I'm okay.
Well, it's kind of nice, but like I said, you did do a lot of traveling when you were younger. So I think that kind of, you know, I didn't travel when I was younger. So now I'm like, I want to go everywhere. So that's my thing now. Did you ever get to do any international travel with your racing, or was it all just stateside?
No, I raced in, let's see, Sweden, Switzerland, Latvia. I did Diz Nations for Team Puerto Rico and Latvia and Germany, and then Team USA, race for Team USA in Italy, raced in Paris, France. So I've been over there a little bit, probably five or six different countries. But not, honestly, not too crazy. Like there's some people that like every fall they off season, they'd go over there and race kind of like the Bercy type races or like German supercrosses. And I never really got into that too much. Kind of wish I would have maybe traveled a little bit more, but I was just so focused on the US series, you know, for most of my career.
Yeah. So what was your favorite place to race here in the States?
I mean, probably Millville for sure, but a little bias there. I really enjoyed Redbud. I love Redbud. I had great races there. That it's weird. I always feel like there was some tracks that like it just was easy, you know, like for Redbud was one of those tracks for me. It just came to me easily. And then like Washougal was always a track that I was kind of scared of, like honestly. But then I got like one of my only wins in my pro career was at Washougal.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ironic, but Southwick was fun. Like, I don't know, I really enjoyed most of the tracks for sure. Supercross wise, like there was always like a vibe, you know, at certain venues I'd go to. Like I actually really enjoyed like the Bay Area. Like I got my first podium at Oakland, and then I got another podium at Santa Clarita. So that was kind of random. But once you have a good result somewhere, it's like you're excited to go back, and it always seems like the vibes are there year after year.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I like that. And what about in Europe? What was your favorite place over there?
Probably Italy. That was pretty cool. Doing Majora. Yeah, that was a pretty iconic one. And Lake Como. You're right by Lake Como. You're at the foot of the Alps. I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful place. That one kind of haunts me a little bit though, because we were like literally like a lap away from winning Diz Nations, you know. Because like I mean, I was really proud of my effort. I think I went 8.8 or 9.9 on the day as a 250 rider, and like just ate roost all day, like rode my ass off. Like Roger DeCoster made the executive decision like that the 250 rider was going to get the outside gate, so like I had to like come from outside the top 30 every moto. And yeah, so I rode great, but then like Cooper tipped over with like a lap or two to go and like basically threw it away. So, and then Jason Anderson got landed on, so that was not ideal.
Oh
But
my God, that's crazy. Oh, well, oh man. Well, I know you have to go soon. In the last couple minutes, I always ask if you have any advice, or what's your best advice for somebody who's just getting into riding a dirt bike?
oh, okay. I feel like
It's
this is geared at you.
not, but yeah, like somebody who's like just starting out.
I would say like obviously get a bike that you are comfortable on. Don't worry about horsepower. I would recommend probably going and getting your suspension set up for you, height, weight, speed, that sort of thing. And yeah, honestly, like this makes me think about some of the vet guys that go and get these like 60 horsepower 450s. Like maybe don't buy a 450. Just too much power. Free, I mean, as a retired racer, like if you don't have want to worry about a hole shot, like a 350 is just such a fun bike to ride. I love riding 350s because I feel like it's like a modded out 250, but it's cheap. You don't have to do anything to it, but yeah, just find a good bike that you enjoy. And I do think like technique, like if you can really find some resources on the internet or join Troll Training, but just get your like focus on your technique. I think that as a beginner, you really want to get that to the point where it's muscle memory, because at some point it will click and you don't have to think about it. But until that time, balls of your feet, elbows up, like head position, get your unlock your hips. Those are some things that'll really help make you safer. And basically just, I mean, if you look at like Eli Tomac or Jet Lawrence, like they're really executing the fundamentals at a very high level. But that's what allows them to go fast and do it lap after lap is just the proper technique. So yeah, just get that down and just go have fun. Go have fun with it.
Cool. I love that. I'm big on technique. Like I said, I'm a nerd. And I found technique after I had been trying to ride for a couple years. But I feel like figuring out that there's something to this whole riding thing, and like what you should and shouldn't be doing. I think that that's made a big difference. So, I love that. And then in our last couple minutes, if you have any thank yous or shout outs that you want to give out, this is your time.
Oh, yeah, you're bringing me back to my racing days. Yeah,
Yeah.
no. Obviously, yeah, we have a lot of great people, sponsors that support Troll Training. We list them all over the place, on our website. Check out trolltrain.com. But yeah, no, I love what we're doing. I love the stage of my life. I'm pumped that I made it through 15 years of pro racing with relatively few injuries. And I mean, I'm enjoying the next stage of my life. Got the running bug. Excited for Boston coming up here in a couple of weeks. And yeah, I don't know. Also taking over Spring Creek, so that's kind of been a task in itself there, kind of like learning the ropes of the family business. So yeah, no,
It's
it's
big
fun.
business too.
Retired life is great.
I hope I get to figure that out one day. But
Yeah.
well, good luck at Boston. I will be watching. I definitely follow you on social media, so it's always cool to see that. I'm always like, yeah, that's awesome. He's training, he's doing this, and so it's really cool. Like I said, I draw inspiration from people. I hard enduro is obviously a huge thing in my life, but running a marathon is not an easy thing. And I always say I do hard things for fun, and so do my friends. So it's cool. I draw inspiration from that for sure. So thank you for posting it. I know you're not a big social media guy, but it does do a lot for those of us who are out there watching. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate that. So, yeah, thanks, Angel. Appreciate you having me on tonight. It was good
Thank
chatting with you,
you.
and good luck with
All right.
your hard enduro racing.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, have a good one.
Thanks. See ya.
All right. Bye.